Time now for sports. Does this sound like a movie? Two implacable enemies face each other on the ice. One is a powerhouse of professional athletes. The other, hometown underage underdogs. By the way, we're not talking about figure skating here. The lead seesaws. First period, 2-1, then tied, 3-2, then tied again. The crowd is close to bursting when finally in the last period, the underdog holds out. A miracle on ice, the American victory over the Soviet Union hockey team in the 1980 Lake Placid Olympics. Joining us now to talk about one of the all-time great games is Elvis Mitchell, our entertainment critic.
No, Scott. I'm the entertainment critic, so I'm talking about the movie Miracle.
Oh, okay. It's a movie, too. That's right. Okay, that makes sense. Well, Ron Rappaport is our sports commentator.
I'm here. We'll talk about the sports from this end.
All right. Elvis, you're in Minneapolis this week, I'm told, right?
I am, because, you know, we got crime in New York, but it's just not cold enough.
Well, good. Enjoy your favorite outdoor sports. Ron is in our Chicago bureau, just a few hundred miles away. It might be difficult in this era of all the talk of U.S. superpower to understand what this game meant at the time. You had U.S. hostages in Tehran. President Carter said Americans were stuck in a malaise. The Soviet Union had the best hockey team on ice. The U.S. team was a bunch of college kids. Now, Elvis, even an accurate rendition of this story sounds like a melodrama.
The real story is so much like a movie that may be the danger. The real event itself is so much like a movie that the movie pales a bit in comparison.
Well, Ron, let me turn to you. We were in Lake Placid in 1980.
Exactly, Scott. What I liked about it, the movie, was that the producers trusted the material so much that they just stayed with it. They resisted the impulses to give the players girlfriends and turn some of them into bad guys. And I also thought that the political context was handled very well in the background without letting it become intrusive. This was a movie about a monomaniacal coach building a hockey team towards one of the great moments in sports history. Mm-hmm. And they weren't afraid to just stay with that and show us that aspect of it.
And I guess if they were really trying to melodramatize the movie for a 2004 sensibility, they would have given some members of the team boyfriends. But I guess they resisted.
You're talking about the Miramax version, aren't you, Scott? Not the Disney version.
Let's present a clip of the film, we can. Here, Kurt Russell plays Coach Brooks, the real-life coach of the team. He doesn't understand why so much attention is being focused on the team, and a U.S. hockey official explains why the spotlight's so bright.
Why so many reporters? Are you serious?
Well, 1-2 games, and you've got a ways to go here.
Think of what they've had to write about the last couple of months. Hostages, Afghanistan, transportation chaos. The bottom line is that your young guys just kicked the crap out of Czechoslovakia. And this is something that this country is ready for.
It was winning that game against Czechoslovakia that set everybody on fire. I think they scored 7 goals. And the game against the Soviets was the second last game. They did have to beat the Finns afterwards. Mm-hmm. But by the time they played the Soviets, ABC hadn't really caught up. They hadn't. Mm-hmm. It's strange to think of an era when the game couldn't have been arranged to be played at night, prime time.
Yeah, middle of the afternoon, as I recall.
Something like that. Yeah. They'd have to show it later, tape delayed. It seems like another world in terms of television.
Oh, my God, it certainly does, because you think about some network somewhere would have played it. I think worst come to worst, it would have been on Lifetime just to get it out there because there had been so much of a fever pitch about it. I guess the thing the movie tries to get at, too, is by showing sort of the three-network system at that time, how that news had to basically catch up with people because there wasn't this kind of omnipresent coverage of everything that was happening in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that needs to be pointed out is I thought Kurt Russell just nailed Herb Brooks the way I remembered him. He just turned him into a guy who was just this side of sadistic in dealing with his players. I saw a funny interview with his son. Herb Brooks died recently, by the way, in a car crash. Mm-hmm. His son said he thought the movie took it a little easy on him. I'll tell you, there's another thing. There were two scenes that brought me right out of my chair. You know, I don't like people who talk back to movie screens. But there are two scenes in the press center where reporters are asking Brooks why he won't bring any of his players to the press conference. You're trying to hog all the glory yourself, Herbie? I bolted up in my chair and I just shouted out, that's exactly what happened.
Is it your memory that Herb Brooks was making himself a public figure at the expense of his players?
No, I think he was oblivious, and I think the movie points that out very well. But I was looking for myself in those scenes.
Well, see, that's why actually I thought that when I saw the credits that it was going to be Kurt Russell playing Ron, so I was a little disappointed that it wasn't him. But what's amazing about that thing, too, is that Russell gets that rigidity of Brooks' face perfectly. The way basically only the lower half of his face really kind of moved or was expressive. He narrows his eyes. He had his hair shellacked and lacquered into that famous sort of Herb Brooks bad 70s those, pop band haircut.
Those wonderful houndstooth pants he was wearing.
And they're now back in style. In fact, they're on the runway in New York even as we speak.
I believe I read that in the Times on Friday, right? It's Fashion Week in New York.
It really was Fashion Week where Herbie was, I'll tell you that.
what I liked about the movie so much, besides that sort of reiteration of all the sports stuff, was I think actually the stuff in the house works pretty well, because as played by Kurt Russell and Patricia Clarkson, who plays his wife, is really like a power struggle in the house. And a lot of the times in these movies, when you do have the sort of fixated, focused, monomaniacal player and or coach, the wife is basically baggage, and she's asserting her personality and says, hey, you have to pay attention to me because I'm part of your life, and I will be a part of your life after all this is over. And that's where I feel the real freshness of the movie lay, in those great scenes between these two actors. And it's a Kurt Russell performance in a movie that people will probably finally see, because he's given a bunch of great performances mm-hmm. in movies that no one has gone to.
I agree. I've seen a couple of reviews where people complain that the Patricia Clarkson role is a typical housewife kind of thing. I thought she stole every scene she was in.
It's interesting to me. 24 years later, we've got a circumstance where most of the best Russian hockey players are playing in the NHL, so much so that the Detroit team has been called the Detroit Red Army Wings. And if there is an overwhelming sports power, although they've lost a step, more than a step in recent years, it's the U.S. Olympic basketball team, because now the pros are on it very openly.
That's very interesting, because, you know, in the voiceover from Russell, he mentions that, and that makes the movie even seem more quaint, the idea that this so far precedes the dream team, but the line that he adds basically is saying the real dreams came from those guys who came out of nowhere, who actually were able to sort of catch people by surprise, rather than watching, we remember, some of the awful spectacles of Charles Barkley sort of bullying people in the first dream team.
Yeah, this is better. It's an old time that's never going to be recaptured. The Olympics is, in a way, they've sold their soul. They want those professional players there, because that gets them the big TV ratings around the world. But it takes away from the wonderful excitement of a moment like 1980. That's never going to happen again. It just won't.
Ron Rappaport, our sports commentator and a columnist for The Bright One, the Chicago Sun-Times. Thanks very much, Ron.
Thank you, Scott.
And Elvis Mitchell, film critic for The Gray One, the New York Times. Thank you, Elvis.
When do I get a theme?
We'll come up with something right now.
Hooray for Han.
But first, why don't we listen to Al Michaels' famous call, February 22nd, 1980.
You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz.